welcome to the Clock and Talk, an Arsenal podcast. I'm your host, Tez. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. You can follow us at clockand_talk. Each and every week, I'm joined by two lovely chaps. Tony, how are you, mate?
Oh, me? I was waiting for you to introduce someone else. Just to check, are you recording? Because we've had this issue before.
I'm all over it, mate. I've hit the record button, and yes, I am recording. Oh,
we found it. We found a competent host this week. Yeah, I'm all good. Thank you.
Good stuff. And Schwinn, how are you, mate?
Doing very well, thank you. How are you boys doing?
I'm doing good, mate. You've noticed I've been nice to you for the last two podcasts now. I've introduced you as, you know, lovely and all that. So the vibe happening, mate?
Yeah. I'm trying to work out why that happened. I mean, today even Tony got the good treatment, so I'm not quite sure what you want from us, but, you know, it'll probably come to us at some point.
It's off-season. There's no football happening. So I've got nothing to complain about yet. So anyway, there was a couple of pre-games, Tony. What do we have? PSG and Atletico Madrid. Mate, what was your thoughts on them games?
Yeah, so obviously we travelled over to Singapore, which is as much of a marking exercise as anything else. Played Atletico on Thursday and then PSG on Saturday. Obviously, we drew 1-1 with Atletico and we lost on penalties. By the time it got to penalties, it was largely a youth team or a B or a C team. Went 1-0 down. Leno was in goal in the first half. I don't think he made a save. He had no chance with the goal. Wasn't his fault. Bad mistake by Holding. Well, the whole defence switched off, to be fair. And then it was a bad mistake by Holding getting turned, showing the striker the wrong way. And then a header, Leno had no chance. You can't lay any blame on him. Guendouzi, of our other new signing that played, had a very good game. Probably our best player was Emil Smith Rowe. So he was 17 at the time. He was 18 on Saturday. He scored our goal. Obviously, it finished 1-1. And he looked very, very bright. Obviously, we don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves because the English press will do that for us at some point. But he was our best player on the day. We started with Lacazette up top and Aubameyang wide. Aubameyang looked bright again, as he has done all pre-season. By the time we got to penalties, as I said, it was a wholesale change. I think Mickey was probably the only first team or fringe first team player on the pitch, apart from Kolasinac, who played 90 minutes. Mickey missed the first penalty. Ainsley was the only one to score a penalty for us. He dinked it down the middle. For me, I was very disappointed, and I was messaging Schwinn at the time that Lucas Perez was on the pitch, and he wasn't great in the 20 or 25 minutes he was on the pitch. He didn't have the best performance. But for me, I would expect if you was him, you'd be wanting to stand out and get yourself in the manager's plans. And when it came to penalties, I thought he would have been the first person to put his hand up just to show he was there. And all the videos Arsenal have been releasing in the last week or so, there's been a lot of finishing and penalties with Perez, Aubameyang, Guendouzi. But he didn't take one. So Mickey missed the first one. Then Joe Willock took one. Obviously Ainsley took one, and Eddie Nketiah took one. And I'm just thinking, like, Perez, let the manager know you're there, sort of thing. And then he didn't come on at all against PSG in the next game. So I don't know. I don't know if that 20 minutes sealed his fate. I would hope not. But when you only get 20 minutes and you play bad and then don't put your hand up when you're one of the senior players on the pitch, I don't think it particularly looks good for you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Schwinn, what do you see, mate, in your eyes?
Yeah, I caught the first half and then I caught the penalties. I missed out in the second half of the Atletico game. But to Tony's point, we just looked very heavy-legged. The touch weren't there, and it just seemed like we couldn't kick out of second gear. Very slow and lethargic almost. Could be the travel, could be, you know, the players satisfying other duties off the field and maybe just weren't quite ready for it. But with a very weakened Atletico side, you would imagine that, you know, some of those players would have made a name for themselves, as Tony talked about Perez. Not the right start to the Singapore campaign, but, you know, we had some bright sparks. Emil Smith Rowe, of course, was one. Guendouzi got into, some good positions and did some good things. Maitland-Niles was calm and composed when he came on. I mean, over the course of both the games, I think it's been a tour for the young players. And, you know, one player that we haven't spoken about yet is Kolasinac, and he was horrendous.
Oh, really?
I just don't know what's going on with him. Very, very slow to get back, which we've seen during the course of the season. But he just seems to offer nothing at the moment. Of course, during the PSG game, he gave away a very weak penalty. No reason to lunge in there. But even during Atletico, just very, very average and in certain cases poor, which you don't expect from him. You know, he's had a very free preseason, nothing to do over the summer, hasn't played a lot of games over the past season. So that probably gave him some motivation to perform well and make a name for himself during this new regime's initial period. But I'm not quite sure what's going on with him.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Tony, we'll get probably bogged down in a bit more of the details of the game because we might have a couple of questions regarding it. Now, I just want to touch quickly on Ramsey. I read there earlier that Chelsea were interested in Ramsey. He hasn't signed a new contract. Lots of talk about it in the media as well. I suppose, you know, two questions here. Arsenal, do they look at selling Ramsey if he doesn't sign a contract, or do we let the contract run out?
I've said for the whole time, and obviously I've been speaking about this for a long, long time, that I would sell him rather than let him go into the last year. He's a good player, but he's very, very replaceable due to his style where, as we've often mentioned, he leaves the midfield empty a lot. And sometimes I feel with Ramsey that as many benefits as he gives you, there is negatives that come with him. Don't get me wrong, I really rate Ramsey, but I just think you could maybe replace him with someone a bit more sensible. And they may not have the upside that Ramsey has, because when Ramsey's playing at his best, he is almost unplayable. But then they also probably wouldn't come with the downsides you get with Ramsey. So I wouldn't let it go into last year. I don't overly believe the Chelsea bid. Reports of 30 million, which is ridiculously low considering we got 40 million for last year Chambo, and Ramsey's levels above what Chamberlain's ever been. So I don't overly believe that, but rumours are true about the Chelsea takeover. You never really know what's going on with there. I hope that big clubs, when they either re-sign a player or sign a player, or someone signs a new contract, they always have to leak that someone else was interested and he chose us over them. Mm. So I'm hoping that's what this is. If you look at when Ozil re-signed, they didn't just say Ozil signed a new contract. They said Ozil signed a new contract, rejecting Man United, PSG, blah, 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 blah. I'm not saying he didn't. I don't know if he did. But they always have to do that. And Tottenham do it all the time. Every club does it. They do it all the time. So I'm hoping that's what it is, that it's been leaked. Whether it's true or not, I don't know, but it's been leaked that someone else has made a bid. And then when Ramsey signs, they can say he had offers from elsewhere, but he really wants to be here, blah, 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 blah. I hope that's what it is. I don't know. His agency tweeted or put on Instagram after the game last night something like the captain's armband looks good on him or something to the effect of about him being captain. So hopefully it's all positive signs, but I would definitely sell him rather than let him go into the last 8 months of a contract.
So what do you give? You give him 4 days to make a decision, and then you think, okay, we get rid of him the last week of the window and we look at bringing somebody else in?
Yeah, I would probably bring in before a takeout.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Just because if you sell him, everyone knows you're desperate.
Yeah, okay.
Whereas we've been linked with a lot of centre midfielders anyway. What's difficult now is a lot of the people that we've been rumoured to be looking at have gone. I mean, I've said the whole time I would have got Golovin anyway, regardless of the Ramsey situation. But now I definitely would have got him if Ramsey's leaving, but obviously that's too late now. He's agreed at Monaco. So it is a tough one because a lot of identified targets have already made their moves. I still, when I said this at the time it was announced with Jack, I still think it was ridiculous that the club let Jack go without guaranteeing Ramsey was tied down. It might not, whether it already signed was an issue, but unless Ramsey said, I'm 100% staying, I'll sign within the next week, I'm just on holiday or whatever, I would not have let Jack go, because I think losing both of them in the same window, it is just ridiculous. They're two longest serving players, I think, or they would have been. I think Ramsey was there before Koscielny. So the two longest serving players, and to let them both go when they're both the same position in the same summer, for me, is suicidal.
Mm-hmm. Schwinn, I'm going to put you on the spot here for a minute. You know, you're obviously thinking Arsenal, you're talking to Ramsey, and what's your spiel to make him stay, mate?
I don't know if I have one, because as Tony said very accurately, he's replaceable. You know, he's been a very key part of our team last year, and from all reports, it seems like Emery wants to hold on to him. But, you know, as Tony was speaking about replacements, I was thinking, do we need to replace him if we do end up selling him, you know, for depth purposes, perhaps? But from a starting 11 point of view, we could probably do without Ramsey. It won't be ideal, but we could do with it. As opposed to last season, if we had lost Alexis or Ozil at the beginning of the season, then we would surely have to go in for replacement. So I don't know if I have that pitch for him to stay. And I think that's one of the reasons that he hasn't signed on yet, and we haven't budged from our best offer. Look, we've been in negotiations with him for almost a year. If there was a consensus to be reached, I feel like we would have nailed him down at the moment. There's no reason to delay these talks. Mm. So, you know, there's been no links, no concrete links, nothing that sustained itself over two periods of time. There were murmurs of Barcelona at the beginning of the summer, but those died down very quick. And I think that's one of the reasons of that is because Aaron himself doesn't want to go. I think he's happy to stay here. Provided that we're able to give him what he wants. He's not making a fuss about leaving, you know? And that sort of gives me as a fan some sort of solace that, okay, maybe there is something to be gained out of this. But the more we delay it, it's July 29th as we speak today, and there's about 10, 11 days left. And, you know, the more we delay it, it's only going to get worse from this point out. So I just want a conclusion to this situation, because there needs to be clarity. There needs to be focus on the football and not on the personnel and not on individual cases. So I don't know if I have that pitch for him. I don't think we need that pitch for him. What we need is a conclusion, and I'm desperate to find one as soon as possible.
Sorry, Tez. My question then, if you say he's not indispensable, Emery does play a three in midfield, which we know he's been fond of before, I assume you're putting Torreira and Xhaka in there. Who's your third?
I'd probably throw Mesut Ozil in there and have Mkhitaryan start.
Takes it back to a 4-2-3-1.
That's what I mean. Okay, I mean, I thought you talked, okay, a flat three, yeah, that probably won't be a possibility, but we've seen Emery switch out of, you know, a flat three midfield to a 4-2-3-1, even play three defenders against Atletico for an instant there. So I'm not sure if he's so wedded to that idea just yet. It might be his preferred method of play.
I think he likes changing, and I think you take away by losing one player just because of the mold of the player Ramsey is, you lose a whole option.
So Ramsey starts in your team, Tony. Sorry, Schwinn.
It depends on what formation he goes with and who the opponent is. Because if we're playing a lesser team, he might go 4-2-3-1 to get more attacking players on the pitch. But then he'd also get Ramsey in team to get them goals from deep. If he does go with a flat three, Ramsey absolutely has to start for me. Because he would be the only one with the legs to get forward or with the intent to get forward. And I think if you don't have a midfielder that can get forward in a three, you literally just can't play that formation anymore. Because otherwise you're essentially playing seven at the back.
Mm-hmm. You agree, Schwinn?
Yeah, no, I mean, I absolutely agree. I just think that it's not, as I said, it's not an ideal departure if it happens and it's not replaced. I'm saying it's one we can cope with. It's not as big as, you know, as losing Alexis or Mesut Ozil at the beginning of last season. He's not that crucial. Maybe I'm not giving him enough credit, and that's entirely possible. But I just think that this situation is not worth dragging into the season, because then all the cards are, you know, in his hand, and we gain nothing out of it. You know, we gain something out of keeping Mesut Ozil into the last season of his contract. He signed despite whatever we're paying him. I don't think that's what we should do with Aaron Ramsey, because we can get someone else if we sell Aaron now, maybe in the next window or the next summer, and you know, still be able to cope with what the season throws at us.
I see where you're coming from, Schwinn, and I also see where Tony's coming from as well. So it's I'm going to be the fence sitter here because, you know, if Ramsey, if he does go, you know, obviously we all know Elneny's not a starter. It'll be, Mkhitaryan, he'll be there. You're saying Ozil, Schwinn. Now, this bloody Guendouzi, is he a starter, Tony?
Look, we don't know. If he shows the level he has in the friendlies in league games, then he's there or thereabouts. My issue is that all of the... if we're playing a flat three, then you've got Elneny, Guendouzi, whatever you want to say, Xhaka, Torreira, all in a very similar mould. They break up play, they can all pass the ball. None of them are goal scorers. None of them are going to get you goals from midfield. Ramsey, for me, is the only one that can play in a deeper centre midfield position. So you can say Ozil or Mkhitaryan, but they're not deeper centre midfielders. Just to add into them centre midfielders, Ainsley's another one that's not going to get, that can do them jobs, but isn't going to get you goals from midfield.
Yeah, that's just what
you're mentioning. So I think Ramsey's in a class of his own, not a class of his own, a mould of his own. And if you lose that, I think you lose a potential to play a whole formation. Because you can't then play a free with three defensively minded midfielders, which all of them players are. You can argue they're box to box players or they're defensive midfielders, whatever role you want to put on them. But the fact is, none of them are goal scoring midfielders, whether they're box to box or whatever you want to call them and however you want to label them. So I think if you lose Ramsey and don't replace him, then you lose an ability to play a whole formation. If you do replace him, which is possible, I think you're going to need someone that adds goals. Because you think there's only going to be three attacking players ahead if you go over a flat three. And as things stand at the moment, it would probably be Ozil, Aubameyang and Lacazette. But you need someone to add something to that. You need a late runner. You need...
And this Smith Rowe kid, he's too young.
Yeah, he's too young. I mean, he's...
As much as he's getting the praise at the moment, he's not going to replace Ramsey.
Oh, no, of course not. And I think if you've got to look at Reece Nelson last year, who looked, you was there. He looked unbelievable in the friendlies. And everyone was going into the season talking about Reece Nelson this, Reece Nelson that. And let's be honest, every time he played for the first team, he looked very poor because he wasn't ready. I'm not saying Nelson's a poor player. I'm just saying he wasn't ready to be playing in a man's game yet.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know that with Smith Rowe because we haven't seen it yet. But I would imagine it'd be the same. I think Smith Rowe will be this year's Reece Nelson, that he is a quality player but maybe just isn't ready yet.
Okay, well, let's Ramsey segue straight into some questions. So hack on Larson, because he was also talking about Ramsey. Now he's thrown that, should Ramsey be captain if he doesn't sign a contract? His opinion is that if you don't commit to his future to Arsenal, he should not be captain. If he's open to other clubs and wants to see how things go this season with Arsenal before he signs, that's not captain material for him. So that's another spin on it, eh?
Well, for me, it's not really another spin on it. If he doesn't sign, I wouldn't have him at the club. So the captain argument is kind of void.
I agree with you. We're going to be ruthless, and that's where I say 4 or 5 days. If he hasn't signed a contract, it's time to we get what we can for it.
I don't think they will. That's what I would personally do, but I don't think
so. Yeah, no. Okay, so continuing on. So Zorro Bob Schwinn, question for you, mate. What was the celebration of Lacazette? No, you might not know. What was the celebration before Lacazette performed after his goal yesterday?
Yeah, I caught that. During the PSG game. I'm not quite sure. It seemed like he was looking towards the bench. I'm guessing it was Aubameyang and him that had like an inside joke or some reference to something that happened behind the cameras. I saw a lot of tweets saying one thing or the other, but you know, I'm not quite sure what that was about.
Okay.
I heard someone saw him in the showers and compared him to a helicopter. So.
Oh, okay. I haven't seen it. I wouldn't have a clue.
As if you took that seriously.
Wouldn't that, mate? You could tell me that and I'd still go, oh, okay. Yeah, true. hack on Larson, Tony, if, what's his name? Guendouzi? Fuck, this is going to throw me. plays like he does now, then Xhaka and Elneny could be in trouble. But I think we should be excited of the fact that we have a lot of competition in the midfield. Maitland-Niles seems to be forgotten by some of the fans as well. Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, we touched on it earlier with the live callers. He's looked good, and at the moment he looks easily at their level, if not above it. But he's playing in substandard games with not as much pressure against not as good players, and there's not as much intensity. So when he's done it in the league and when he's done it for 5-10 games in a row, then you can say, yeah, their positions are under serious pressure. But he's a great squad player, and as Hakon said, we've got a lot of competition, so he will be useful. But I wouldn't be saying at this moment he's ahead of them in the pecking order.
Okay. Schwinn Glenn Baxter says, he's fucking cunt having a shot at me now. Is anyone sensing a pattern with Tez? First Xhaka, now Shaqiri. Did you see that goal? Fucking Jesus, I did see that with Shaqiri.
I knew you would talk about that.
I wasn't going to until Glenn brings it up. Now, you boys were taking the piss on me last week about 13 million. I tell you what, he could be the buy of the season
for Liverpool. He 100% won't be.
Will you ever agree with me?
Not when you're wrong.
I'm surprised he isn't a Lichtsteiner train on the Lichtsteiner train yet. Lol. Fuck off, Glenn, you idiot. Okay. Hakon Larsson. Have you ever seen a more moaning, crying cunt than Mourinho? What he said about the youngsters before the Liverpool United game last night is beyond me. He said that not one of them will be a part of the squad, but that feels nice for the youngsters to hear when they work hard. Schwinn, did you hear that?
I did, and there's been a lot of stuff going on Twitter about Mourinho as well. I mean, look, I look at it from two ways. A, first and foremost, it's brilliant to see Mourinho in this situation, right? We've always had this tussle with him during his time at Chelsea, and you know, it's carried on ever since he's gone on to United as well. But I can't help but agree with him to an extent. You know, when you're at a club of that stature, of Arsenal stature or United or whatever, you have a top six club, you need to improve in the off season. And that's you just cannot say that about United at the moment. Of course, he's talking about the squad that traveled and that lacks a lot of players that made it deep into the World Cup. But looking at the business they've done, it's quite shocking. Not a single marquee signing. Usually you expect them to make one or two. And it seems like Ed Woodward is you know, sitting with his hands on his ass. So I understand the pain. It's brilliant. It's very appeasing, and it's, you know, lovely to witness. But you know, I sort of agree with him. So it's one of those things for me.
He's just a whinging moaning cunt to start with. Is this his third year United? Was it third year at Chelsea? Started losing the dressing room. Started having problems. They come 14th in the league that year.
It's third year.
Chelsea, Real Madrid.
Real Madrid was the same. So, you know, this is... I'm not putting United in my top four, I don't think.
And just to be fair to Tony, for the record, if people have forgotten, he did say a couple of months ago that Mourinho is not going to see this season out. He did make that prediction. So I do want to remind our listeners that if that happens, then, you know, Tony's going to be right once again.
I'm also going to be absolutely unbearable on here for a bit.
Don't count me out for that episode.
Don't talk him up.
Yeah, it won't be just one episode. I'm still banging on about getting the World Cup right, how England would play. But you're going to hear about that at least until Qatar 2022.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I'm boycotting that because Australia we got ripped off of that. I'm boycotting that World Cup now. Some back-end deals going on, boys.
Australia boycotted the last World Cup, didn't they?
No, we were there. we're the only team that stood up to France.
Didn't you lose to them?
Yeah, we did. Yeah. It was a lot warmer. Okay, MAA Gunner, do you think our defence will look better once Torreira comes in? Tony?
I mean, you'd hope so. That's what he's been in, built for, to be a screen. But as I said, it's difficult with these games because they're so open. No one's really up to full fitness. So in friendlies, it's like you don't really have that screen in front of the defence, or we haven't in these friendlies. Look, that's the job he's been built in to do. So we can only hope so. I don't really know how else I can answer. Look, I think he's not magically going to make players better. I think what he is hopefully going to do is stop their weaknesses being exposed. Because if he's there to cover them, then if, say, for example, if Mustafi is weak with players running at him, which he is, if Torreira is that screen 10 yards in front of him, hopefully players won't have that opportunity to run at Mustafi as much because Torreira's there. So that's what we hope for from him. Let's see if it pays off.
I'm going to just say about the only thing I see with him, and when he was playing in the Serie A, as I said when we signed him at Arsenal, he wasn't a name that screamed, like, that drew my attention. Like, and I follow Roma. I watch a bit of Serie A, mainly obviously Roma. I don't watch every game of every other game, but you know what I mean? He wasn't one of them players that went, oh shit, geez, I hope Arsenal sign him, or I hope Roma sign him. But since he's come to Arsenal, he's got so much media attention since the World Cup and through that. And I wonder whether that's just on the back end of he's now in the Premier League, he's come to Arsenal, and he's in the spotlight more.
Well, he did. He had a very good World Cup. And you've got to remember, he didn't start the World Cup as well. He forced his way into the team and then made himself almost one of the first names on the team sheet. Mm. So I think he gained a bit of traction there. Also, you've got to remember that, and I'm not comparing them because it would be a ludicrous comparison, but that role isn't an attention-getting role. Claude Makélélé was never... No one cared about him in Madrid. And then when he left, they noticed the gap where Makélélé once was.
Mm.
And that's what happens with that type of player. I think you notice them more when they're not there, which is obviously weird to say, but I think their absence makes the heart grow fonder is the perfect saying for that type of player.
Yeah. Oh, look, I hope he has a brilliant season. It's exactly what Arsenal want, but it's just, I never went, oh, well, look, I want him, that was all.
But when Kante gets plaudits because of his energy, but unless Matic, say, scores a screamer, it's very rare people go, Matic, that's the guy we need. And Matic is a fantastic defensive midfielder. Mm. But that role is to sort of not really be seen, just go about your work.
Yeah, true, yeah. Okay, MAA Gunner. Schwinn, does the club get money from the pre-season tournaments? Pretty sure.
I would imagine so, and I would imagine that's one of the reasons that we went to Singapore. I mean, I'm sure they get paid. I'm not in two minds about that, but I'm guessing there's a few options available to the club. Tony can probably clear this for us a bit further, but I'm guessing there's a few options, and depending on which is the most lucrative one, clubs take a decision on where they want to go play. I'm also not quite sure how it works out when you have, you know, an ICC sort of tournament going on with teams playing in different continents, and you still have this singular table and you have a winner. So I'm not quite sure how things go on there, but you bet your ass they get paid for traveling and doing all sorts of media events, et cetera, et cetera.
Tony, you got any add on that, Mark?
Yeah, I'm not sure if the clubs get paid by the ICC, who obviously run the tournament, or whoever sets up the tournament. But they will get a share of gate receipts, and it's rumoured that yesterday was the biggest attendance in the Singapore stadium for a football match, and the tickets, I'm told, were quite expensive. So there'll be a healthy share of gate receipts there. But what these tours are mainly about is growing a fan base. Tez, you would have seen this last year in Australia. Obviously, you already had a team, but people that don't have a team, they'll support whoever's in town because they've got to see them. And then if they've enjoyed what they've seen, they'll carry on supporting them, and they'll start buying all their kits and buying all their merchandise and buying their content. So it's more about building a fan base. That's why they tend to go to places where are largely untapped. So Australia really didn't have many Premier League teams go there, and Arsenal and Chelsea went there in the same year. It's all about just trying to get into an untapped market. obviously the Asian market's huge. So if you can pick up some fans there, you're doing well. There's been talk for a few years of Arsenal going to Africa, and I think we did a few years ago, but we didn't play a game there, or we just went and took the FA Cup there, but the team didn't go. And I know there's always been safety concerns as the reason to not go to Africa, but again, it's a largely untapped market. So I think a lot of the benefit comes in form of a growing fan base and becoming a bigger brand.
Yeah, I agree. Everything that every time I see a pre-season or something, it's for me, it's just, as you say, it's just a promo tour, and it's to attract the fans. I'm just trying to think, as you mentioned, ticket prices. I think I paid about $75 a ticket last season when they came out here. So I'm not sure what that is equivalent to you, but I took me and my young bloke, and it was about $150 or something. So.
I know the tickets for the game in Ireland against Chelsea, which is also ICC, the tickets are around £70, which is like more expensive than a league game. It's crazy. But if they're priced at similar price in local currency, like everywhere they go. So Singapore, as I said, I think there's about 55,000 fans yesterday. So even if Arsenal PSG split the gate, you've still got £27,500 paying, say, £70 a head. That's clear. So it's $250,300. And then, as you said, I mean, and yesterday it was largely Arsenal, but people would have been buying the shirts, the scarves, flags.
They make a lot of money.
Money that goes to Arsenal. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because they had the stores all set up there, you know, the Arsenal store at the front of the gates and things like that. So, yeah.
Well, it's also why Arsenal always do the kit launch abroad now. So obviously the Ferb kit last year was launched in Australia on the harbour, in Sydney Harbour, I believe. Yep. And then, yes, obviously the green kit was launched 2 days ago in Singapore. So again, it's like, oh, we're here, and they launched the kit there. So everyone rushes out and buys it. And again, obviously you're making money that way.
Mm-hmm. Just since you bring up kits, what was your thoughts on the new kit, the third kit?
For me, a green kit, well, the third kit for me is just something you can have fun with. I fundamentally have a problem with third kits, and I don't really think there's a need for them. But if you are going to have them, which most teams do, have fun with it. I know people are moaning about the colour, but there's no traditional colour for a third kit because there's no tradition. So I don't think it's as bad as people think. I think it's okay. I don't think it's great. But with a third kit, I think you have license to go crazy. Look, last year's one really worked for me, the grey and pink. I liked it. And look, yeah, again, it's not traditional Arsenal colours, but that's the point in a third kit.
Mm-hmm.
They've got license to explore, and that's what they've done.
Yeah, yeah. I wish I bought that kit now, that black and pink one. I didn't buy it. Schwinn, what was your... I put it on and it didn't look good on me. Pink's not my colour, boys. Schwinn, what was your on the kits, mate? Just your third kit. Did you like that, or so we've been talking about kits this week, haven't we?
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind it. I do want to see it in person before I make a decision on it, just because you know, I'm not sure how with real life lighting it's going to look. I think the shoot that Arsenal did made it look a bit darker than it might be in real life. That's my suspicion, but I'm not quite sure yet. But as Tony said, you know, you have license to explore with that, and I'm fine with it. I do want to say that in a way, kit should always be yellow, but it seems like we've let that fall by the wayside. Just quickly onto the question that we just answered. I was surprised we went back to Singapore this year. I think last time we went there was 2014, maybe 2015. So. You know, of course, brand building is a big part of this exercise, and considering that, were either of you a bit surprised that we were revisiting a small country like Singapore, and maybe not exploring, you know, Thailand or China or, you know, some of the more populated countries in Asia, if that was the go?
No, I was just going to say they did China last year after Australia, and I think Singapore, it's a big, what did you say, 54,000 attended? Like, that's a pretty big market.
I was going to say, obviously, they did go to China after Australia. And I don't know about the populations within Thailand and Singapore. I'm assuming because you've said that Thailand's bigger, but Singapore is a million times more affluent. So they're more likely to buy replica kits and whatnot. Also, a lot of fake products are made in Thailand, sorry. So if as soon as the Arsenal kit was out, there would have been a fake one for a tenth of the price, probably within a day. And that's the one that people would go for because wealth isn't as strong there. So I think Singapore, just because of its wealth as a country, is probably a better option than anywhere else in Asia apart from China, Japan possibly, but I think their football league's quite big, and because you've got players going there like Iniesta, I'd imagine if they are interested in the European league, it will be Spain.
Because I was actually thinking when I seen them going to Singapore, what other countries could would Arsenal visit that would attract that the big promos and big crowd swing? Like, I think anywhere they do go, but like as Tony said, Singapore attracts that. When Australia were here, we had the two games. When they were here in Australia, we had the two games. I think it was about 40,000-50,000 at each game. So they played 2 days in a row. So it was, probably you'd say it was a success. China was a success. Singapore, next year, where do you head to next year?
I'm not sure. I mean, you probably go further east. South Korea is an option. As Tony said, Thailand is, of course, notorious for fake kits. And if you look in the neighboring areas, so is Vietnam, I would imagine. The Philippines are currently undergoing a massive, democratic issue. So that's probably not a safe place to go. And Indonesia is also not the safest place in certain parts. But I would imagine that certain big cities, population centers could still, serve as a hub for brand management and brand growth. I mean, I get why we went to Singapore. My question was, why didn't we go elsewhere? I'm trying to think of different countries. But of course, there are people at Arsenal Football Club who are much more, well-versed with how to go about their business. So I'm not questioning that. I just found it a bit surprising, that's all.
Does Thailand have the stadiums? Can it facilitate it?
Yeah. South Korea has a 70,000 people stadium, if I'm not mistaken. So does Thailand. I know there's a very, very big one in Vietnam as well. But again, I'm not sure how. I mean, as you said, right, it's probably an equation of many factors. But Singapore has 5 million people. And I would imagine that a long-term strategy of, Thailand has 60 million people, for example, roundabout. So I would imagine that a long-term strategy, when you've been to Singapore, and nothing against Singapore, but when you've been there 4 or 5 years ago, if it still makes sense to return, is all I was sort of looking into.
Mm. Yeah. Has anyone ever been to India? Because it seems like a huge market.
Yeah, it's massive. I mean, the Middle East is another one. It's just that it's too hot right now. That would be my number one suggestion otherwise. And India is massive. You can go there 10 times and still not visit the full country.
Has Arsenal ever been to India? No.
No, the club's done some events in Bangalore. I know in Delhi where Robert Perez and Ray Parler have gone and done some outreach, but the full squad has never visited.
Every week we ask our listeners to give us a call in. This week we've got a sponsor who's kindly gave us a Arsenal shirt to give away to one of our listeners, and that was at Arsenal Urban. You can find his shop, Urban and UrbanFShop.com. So thank you for that, and I believe there's going to be a couple more of them shirts to give away. Henry, how are you, mate?
Oh, not too bad, thanks.
That's the way. What's your question for the boys?
Well, I watched the Arsenal PSG game yesterday, and I was very impressed with our new signing, Matteo Guendouzi. What do you think about him?
Just how did you pronounce that name again? Because this is throwing me, this one.
It's like Matteo Guendouzi or something like that.
Guendouzi, because mate, I struggle, so I'm not taking the piss here. Because I was actually trying to get a take on that. Tony, what's your thoughts, mate?
Yeah, I mean, he's looked impressive in the obviously the PSG game, the Atletico game, and I think he got 20-25 minutes against Boreham Wood. I'd never seen him before. I'd never heard of him before. I didn't know he existed. And for a kid that no one had heard of, a young boy, for 8 million, he's looked promising so far. I think we do have to look at it with a bit of caution because he's had time. He always wants the ball, which in that position is crucial. But at such a young age, you usually don't get players with that confidence. So I like his confidence and he uses the ball very well. But due to it being friendlies and the games aren't fast paced and the teams don't press as hard, he tends to have a lot of time to pick the pass he wants or make the run he wants. So I'll be more, if he does this when he, in league games, when teams are on top of him and they're actively trying to stop him building attacks from deep, then I'll be more impressed. So I'm not running away with myself yet. If you compare him to Xhaka, and I'm not saying they're the same player, but our biggest issue with Xhaka, I would say, as a fan base, is that his passing range is very good, but when he gets pressed, he sometimes panics or plays the wrong ball or just kicks it anywhere to stop himself being under pressure. But in a friendly, he wouldn't get that, and Xhaka would be able to play all these passes and whatnot. It remains to be seen how Guendouzi acts under pressure, and as I said, hopefully he can come through that, and if he does, we've found a real gem.
Guendouzi, is it?
I'm not sure. That's what I'm going with.
Have you given him a nickname yet?
Nah.
Nah. First game in, you might.
Yeah, let's see.
Schwinn, what's your thoughts on him, mate?
From what I've heard, his name is Guendouzi. But, you know, until the time we hear something concrete, I'm not sure what to go with. But I'll have to agree with Tony. I think for $8 million, he's a very promising buy. Lots of value from what we've seen so far. Very metronomical, happy to be on the ball, offers himself to his teammates, whether it's in our half or the attacking half. And the ability to pick out a ball. I thought we saw a couple of instances where he not only was happy to try long balls towards Aubameyang, but against Atletico, he wasn't scared of taking a shot on from 30, 40 yards either. So, you know, it just speaks to the fact that Tony was talking about his confidence and his composure. And I'm a big fan of that signing. I think in a lot of ways, he's sort of a mixture between Elneny and Maitland-Niles. He's got that composure and he's got that work rate that both those players offer. So lots to look forward to. Depth in midfield is something we needed and we were asking for it at the beginning of the summer. And it seems like we have achieved that at least so far.
Henry, did you know much about him before he joined Arsenal?
I'd seen a couple of clips about him, but no, I haven't really noticed him before.
Yeah, okay. Are you looking forward to the season, mate?
Yeah, really looking forward to it.
Well, I got your quick prediction for the season, top four?
I think we'll finish fourth.
Fourth, righto. Mate, thanks for your call and hope you join us again.
Okay.
Okay, MAA Gunner, how are you, mate?
I'm good.
That's the way. What's your question, mate?
What are your first Arsenal match experiences?
First Arsenal match experiences. Tony?
My first experience, I'm not really sure because my dad was a season ticket holder and he went home and away, Europe and everything. Similar to what I do now, he was probably more committed than I am, if I'm honest. I think he missed 4 games in 15 years, home, away, all competitions, which is crazy. So I dare say, and I know he's told me he used to drag me along to games before I even knew what was going on, really. The first game I actively remember going to, I think my mum got me the ticket as a birthday present and we beat Stoke, who were in like the third or fourth division at the time, 5-2 in a League Cup game. And I remember we scored a goal just after half time because I nearly missed it. That's pretty much all I can remember. I did actually Google it a few months ago to see if I had remembered it that accurately because I can't have been that old. And I think it was also my first game under Wenger. I don't remember going to a game pre-Wenger. I remember watching games pre-Wenger, but I don't remember going until he was our manager.
MAA Gunner, what was your first moment, mate?
Last year I went to Arsenal versus Preston. We beat them 2-1, and Giroud scored in the last minute. That was like my first actually going to a match.
Yeah, okay, mate. I've only went to the Sydney FC Arsenal game pre-season last year, so. But watching on, obviously, you know, being a fan, watching on TV, living over here in Australia, I'd have to stretch. When the reason what, and I may get a bit of shit for this, but Wenger actually drew me to the club. I just liked you know, what he was what he did and what he was doing and stuff all them years ago. And you know, obviously as a foreign fan, you were no ties to London or wherever we are. So you got to type of pick a team, and I basically picked it based on history. I read a lot about the history of Arsenal and you know, how they were founded and things like that. So that's how I type of decided on Arsenal. Okay, Paddy, how are you, mate?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, good, buddy, good. What's your question, mate?
So Arsenal have made a lot of business this summer, but who is your favourite signing and why?
Good question. Tony?
I think in terms of, look, I always say all of the positions we've signed players for are what we've needed. Torreira is probably the best player out of the lot, and it's something we've been crying out for a long time. But Lichtsteiner, for me, is a very shrewd signing, not cost us anything, and at worst case, he pushes Hector onto it to get back to a level he was 2 years ago. But if Hector remains at his current level, we have a solid, dependable right-back to come in. I'm most excited about Torreira, obviously, because I think he's the highest level of player we've signed, but I think Lichtsteiner practically was a brilliant signing.
Schwinn, you've just joined us back. Paddy asked, you know, with all the signings we've had this year or this transfer window, who was the one that stood out for you so far?
I heard Tony's response. I caught the tail end of that response. And apart from Lichtsteiner, who I think was obviously a void we needed to fill, we didn't have a backup right back. I will have to say that Guendouzi has me on the ropes a bit. Not expected at all, but over the last two and a half games, I think he's really impressed. He's played two games and been very, very involved. He's not hidden on the pitch. And as a young player, you can, you can try and do that every now and then. It might not be the opposition, but you're surrounded by some quality players. You know, you have the likes of Aubameyang, Mesut Ozil, who are big personalities on the pitch. And he has not shied away from the spotlight. Just a quick shout out to Emile Smith Rowe, who of course is an academy product and is not a transfer per se, but I thought he was also very confident on the ball and didn't shy away from taking shots on and trying some adventurous passes. So he's also very impressive in that regard. But in terms of the new transfers, I'll have to go with Guendouzi.
I love it. You say that. Guendouzi. I love it. For me, it was, now I've come under a bit of sticky because I was saying Leno. But I've heard five different pronunciations this week. I've heard Luno, Lino, Leno, Lano. So I don't know what it is. And this is all coming from Talk Sport, Tony. So it's in your country.
It's Leno. Leno. I mean, it's a four-letter word. It's really not that hard to pronounce.
I thought exactly the same. I thought, fuck, I'm not the best at pronunciations. And I thought I'd nail that one first off. But I just think Arsenal needed a goalkeeper. I think Cech was getting a bit old, Ospina as well. So I think it was a signing that we needed, and I'm glad we got a young goalkeeper. What was yours, Paddy?
I totally agree with you. I think Leno, we needed to fill that area because I think Cech was turning into a bit of an old liability. So I definitely think we needed to fill that area. But I mean, our signings throughout the summer have been absolutely amazing. And I mean, we've dug right into our pockets and got the cash out when we needed to, unlike other seasons.
Yeah, I totally agree. And just on Tierra, I reckon you'll see him in the highlights real very quickly. He is class. So, thanks for joining us, Paddy.
Thanks, mate.
Vish, how are you, mate?
Good, and you, Tony?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Good. What's your question this week, buddy?
What happened to two parts of my question? What happened to Arsenal being linked to Max Meyer, and if we are linked, we are searching for a winger and going to be spending 50 million on Guerra and Valencia. Why don't we use the same money and try and purchase either Willian or Martial? Martial, we know, once out of Man United, and he'd be the perfect winger, although he plays from the left instead of the right.
Before Tony answers about Max Meyer, I just want to ask a bit more onto that question, Tony. Max Meyer, yes, we were heavily linked to him at the start of the season or last transfer window as well, I think. But it seems like he's available for free, but nobody has gone for him. And that's the part that's worrying me about him.
Apparently, I mean, look, everyone knows when you're out of contract, your wages are higher than normal because they've not had to pay a transfer fee for you. The reports are saying that Meyer wants 130 grand a week. Obviously, because he knows he's not got a transfer fee to be paid for him. From as far as I know, quite a few clubs have spoke to him and just completely said no. I believe Bayern Munich were looking at one point. There's been us. There's been apparently Liverpool. There was someone else, and it was like basically like he joined. He was the reports were like he's essentially there already, and then exactly the same thing happened. I can't remember what club it was. But yeah, there's been four clubs that have all apparently just completely refused to pay him what he's demanding.
Mm.
I suppose time's on his side in a sense, but on the other hand, wherever he goes now, he's missed pre-season practically. Even if he signs for someone tomorrow, he's way short. So it's a bit of a stupid move on his part, but if he ends up getting what he wants, then maybe it's a good move. Also, because he is a free transfer, he can sign after the transfer window closes. So it could be a case, obviously, with the Premier League starting very early, like the 9th, 10th and 11th of August, if someone gets a couple of injuries in the first 2 weeks, then he will get them wages he wants because he's one of the only players that can be signed because he's out of contract. It was interesting as well. Yesterday, I saw the list of players that are available on a free, and I can't remember. I mean, he was on there, and I can't remember who else. But like, there's people like Yaya Toure. There was a lot of good players that I'm surprised haven't got clubs still. It really surprised. It was about 10 players, all not obviously world class, but all of a very good level, and none of them have got clubs. And I don't know what the reason for all of them is, but as I said, they all do have that advantage of the transfer closing very early in England, and if someone wants them after that date, they'll be able to name their own price. So yes, they're missing out on wages now, but they may be able to get a good long-term deal off the back of a bit of scare tactics. So that's, I think, the case with Max Meyer. In terms of a winger, I mean, I don't believe for a second the 50 million reports with Guedes. And you mentioned speaking to Valencia, but he's not even a Valencia player. He was on loan there. He's a PSG player. There was rumours of Valencia activating a clause, and then us paying more than that clause. So essentially they buy him for, say, 30 million and sell him to us instantly for 40 million. I can't see that happening. In terms of, as you just mentioned, Willian or Martial, I mean, Willian, by all accounts, has been bids of 60 million already rejected. So you then have to add on that we're essentially a rival. So if someone else, say Barcelona, had 65, 70 million accepted, we'd be looking at 75, 80. Obviously, Chelsea, it looks like, are going through a takeover. So business is going to be a bit weird for the next few weeks with Chelsea. In terms of Martial, I just don't think... Look, United don't need the money, and I don't think there's any way on earth that Mourinho would sell to us. I think he knows his team's a bit shaky, hasn't done the business he would want to, and strengthening a rival is not something he likes doing. He wouldn't even loan us Demba Ba when he was at Chelsea, and I know that's been used to prove a few points, but it does show the type of man Mourinho is. He doesn't really care what the player wants. He cares about, obviously, the strength of his team and his rivals. Also, as you pointed out, I think we're screaming out for a right winger more than anything, unless Aubameyang's going to play through the middle and Lacazette gets dropped, which personally would be my preference, but I don't think it's going to happen. I think he will start with Aubameyang left and Lacazette as a nine, which means we need a right winger, and I don't see us going out and spending 50 million plus on a player who we have to jig around the system for, unless that is a top draw player. And to be honest, I don't think there's anyone that's within that's gettable for us that I would count as top draw.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else, Bish?
Yeah, who would you recommend, Tony? Because after watching the last two games, I'm not full of confidence. We broke down Atletico, and they had the brilliant goalkeeper in Jan Oblak, but it was their second string team. And even with PSG, we only started scoring after Buffon went on, and even then too, we conceded in those games against youth, third choice youth team. So I still feel there's a lot of improvement for this team right now.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think we're anywhere near a finished article. I mean, I don't really look into the goals conceded, because if you look at both goals we conceded, they've both been stupid mistakes, one by Holding, one by Kolasinac, which, I mean, they're probably easier to iron out, little individual mistakes. It's good that there's fundamentally been no mistakes with the system. There was one against Atletico just after we changed to a back five, where the line was one of the worst defensive lines I've ever seen, but we'd literally changed to a back five 30 seconds before. So, I mean, I'm not too worried about that. So it looks like they're kind of in sync, which is better. In terms of who I would recommend, look, as I said, for me, I think he's going to start with Lacazette as a nine, which puts Aubameyang left. And then if we go over flat three, it'll be Ozil right, and then the three in the middle will be Ramsey, Xhaka and Torreira, I'd imagine. If we go 4-2-3-1, which how we went yesterday, you'd have Ozil at 10. And as I said, if he plays Laka at nine, then Aubameyang left. And on the right, I mean, Dembele is a dream. Whether that's possible, I don't know. We've been linked with Bailey a lot, but I think every time I've seen him, he's looked better on the left and played more on the left, which obviously, as we just mentioned, causes problems in itself. It is a tough one because I don't feel like there's loads of players out there. Even Guedes plays more. I know he's right footed, but he plays more from the left. It is a really tough one. I mean, there probably is people, but you put me on the spot here. And beyond Dembele, I can't really think of anyone.
But I think we did agree that Martial could play from the right, couldn't we?
No, I think you said that and no one agreed.
Okay. Fair call, cunt. right, thanks, Fish, for your call.
No problem, guys.
Okay, question from Glenn. Obviously, Tony, looking at PSG's lineup, it was weak. What are the positives that can be taken out of this game? Have you been impressed with the game plan and what has changed from last season to these handful of games?
I don't think you can read too much into pre-season friendlies. The positives are people got minutes under their belt. It helps with fitness, playing time. You can help build some relationships. Obviously, it's the first time we've seen Socrates and Mustafi together. So some partnerships could have been built. We got to see Ozil as a 10 behind Aubameyang, which we've very rarely seen in an Arsenal shirt. So you can build relationships. I don't even think looking into the opposition is important at all, really. I think all of them things are kind of irrespective of who you played. They also had, PSG had a lot of young, pacey players. So whether they had the ability is a different story. But if you've got to chase someone who's quick, you've got to chase someone who's quick, whether they're the best player in the world or the worst, they're still quick.
How weak was the PSG lineup?
It was a lot of unheard of players. Buffon started, Lassana Diarra, Rabiot, Lo Celso came on in the second half. But it was a lot of young, unknown players.
Yeah, okay. PSG's future talent, eh? Yeah, right.
Yeah.
RC or Zoro Parbob, who's more in love, Lacazette and Aubameyang or Tez and Xhaka? Schwinn?
Oh, no question. No question. It has to be Tez and Xhaka. And we've seen him. Our listeners have heard you dribble on and on about him. And if anyone got a peek into our WhatsApp chat, of what goes on, no question.
I was actually at the tattoo artist bloke the other day, and I showed him a picture of Xhaka, and he's trying to get a tattoo just down below my arm. So,
yeah, on your right butt cheek.
No, I can't see it there. How can I fucking have a wank and look at my ass at the same time?
Shit.
Tony, hack on Larson. Do you guys think the club will surprise us with a late signing? I haven't had that feeling, but it's been really quiet and usually a good sign. Yeah, usually a good sign when it was Wenger. Not disappointed if nothing happens, though. Just a bit. We need a fucking winger.
Look, I think they have to. I don't know anyone, even the most positive people I know, don't look at this squad and think, yeah, that's complete. because it's not. We're just lacking in a few areas, really. I dare say we need another left back. We need another centre back, and we definitely need a right winger. Of course, all three of them things are not going to happen, but I'd be extremely disappointed if at least one of them gaps isn't filled.
You talk about a left back, so you boys are right. From what you're telling me, Klozanac wasn't real good. And I'm hearing Monreal might be leaving us. So where does that leave us in the left-back department?
Oh, in trouble is the answer. Shit, yeah. I mean, I don't think Nacho will leave, but I just – look, and everyone will know I've been saying this since pretty much 10 games into last season. I don't rate Klozanac. I can't see him ever being good enough to be an Arsenal left-back. So with Nacho getting older – you're going to have to start looking to the future at some point.
Would you sell Ramsey if that would mean, this is from Hack On again, would mean buy a winger for around 70-80 million? He said he loves Ramsey, but I think the weeks are going very fast and have to see it more beneficial to sell than keep in this current situation.
In a heartbeat. I'd definitely do that. But I probably wouldn't splash all that cash on a winger because it sort of ties in with the question about Willian and Martial. I mean, Martial wants to leave because he doesn't get playing time, and he probably wouldn't get, you know, constant playing time at Arsenal either. You know, we need a younger player who's happy to come off the bench and can still do a job. And I think we can still get one of those in 30, 40 million. I'd probably put the rest of the money into another center midfielder who can provide some depth, maybe not be a starting option like Rambo is, but who can come off the bench and provide some sort of versatility. You know, as Tony spoke, that Ramsey is a very unique mold we have. And if we lose him, we need to bring in someone like him. He might not be that far in quality, that superior in quality, but we can bring someone who can provide that in the next 2-3 years. And I'd probably divide that money into two players, but definitely not spend all of that on a winger who is going to sit on the bench and who might not be happy with that.
Yeah, I'm sorry to put you on the spot here, but 70-80 million. Give me a winger who give me a winger for 70 or 80 million.
Usman Dembele. I'd probably figure we could maybe even go in for a Paulo Dybala, who'd probably cost a bit more, if I'm honest. But, you know, Dembele is definitely one who's been linked, who seems...
Well, he'd be 120 plus, surely.
Well, not if he's one away, not if he is surplus to requirements to the manager as well. I mean, Barcelona could easily, you know, stick with him and see what happens in the next window or two. But if he's throwing a tantrum and the manager doesn't want him around, doesn't want him in the dressing room, we could probably persuade them to maybe have a loan system for 1 year and then finalize a transfer fee next summer. But he'd probably be number one on many Arsenal fans lists.
Said it again. I've said it already. Shaqiri for 13 million. That was the buy of the season right there.
Not going to grace that with a response.
Hakon Larsson, Tony, I know that a new manager can change tactics and improve player, etc., but at what point will the individual skills of a player be a factor? At what point isn't a player good enough to do you think?
I think it's more on the capability to learn and improve, because every manager will rate themselves to come in and be able to improve everyone, really. But whether the player can do that, obviously not everyone can, otherwise we'd all be perfect at everything. So a manager can come in and see weaknesses in a player's game, as we all can. I could list the weakness of every player, as everyone can. I'm not saying I have some special ability, and they'll identify that weakness and they'll try and improve upon that weakness. But sometimes people have just hit their ceiling and they can't improve anymore, and they don't have the capability to learn. And that's at the point when a manager has to figure that out, and if they feel the player isn't good enough currently and also doesn't have that capability to learn and improve, then they've got to get rid.
Hakon Larsson also says, Tez, when you're feeling dirty, are you looking at Shaka compilations on YouTube instead of porn? we're on first name basis now, Hakon. It's actually Granite, mate, not Shaka. So we're first name basis now, mate. YouTube is a marvellous thing. Yes, I do get my daily fix of Granite on it, YouTube. Hakon Larson again. Schwinn, most disappointing players in preseason so far.
Well, of course, we spoke about Kolasinac, and that probably goes without saying. Emi Martinez is a big question mark for me. I'm not sure what we're trying to do with him. You know, I'm sure we had some interest for him, but it seems like there wasn't because he's still around. I'm not sure if he's ever going to feature for us in this season. You know, we've got three goalkeepers still. Ospina's still around at the club, although I think Besiktas are in for him, but I'm not quite sure what's going on there. Hector Bellerin's another one. There were a couple of moments yesterday when there were very, very good interplay between the players deep in our half and able to squeeze out of there. And Hector had a very good chance to find Aubameyang over the top, and he just couldn't find that pass. His crossing hasn't improved. And, you know, I'm not quite sure what Emery thinks of him. I mean, we, of course, need him at the moment. We don't have another right back who's going to come in and start week in, week out. We cannot expect that of Lichtsteiner, but Bellerin hasn't improved to the naked eye just yet. Other than that, I'm not sure if we should really speak about anyone. I think everyone else has been good. Mkhitaryan looked a bit shaky, but you know that could just be the one game. I think he was good against Bournemouth. He was decent for most of the time yesterday, but nothing special. Of course, it was his pass that led to the Ozil goal and led Aubameyang through on goal as well. So those three players have not impressed me so far, but maybe Tony has some extra other players who also caught his eye.
Kolasinac, Saeed, and our number 31.
Okay. Tony, question from Anonymous. I think Tez was right with Shaqiri. Imagine Shaqiri and Granite playing together in Arsenal colours. Tony?
Fuck's sake. Anonymous, get out of here.
he didn't even fucking answer the prick. His internet connection's probably fucking died in Arsenal.
No, if I come down to stupid, you'll beat me with experience, so I'll just leave you to it.
Okay, here's one from Zorro Par Bob. What did you guys make of the statement from Sir Chips Keswick Re-Gazidis? Personally, since no one included Ivan has squished the rumours, I'd bet odds on he is leaving.
Yeah, it's a strange one because a lot of people's issues with Gazidis is he seems to make statements for no reason a lot of the time. And like when we announced Emery, he done a press conference 3 hours later on his own, and it was almost like, what's the point? Like, do you just want time in front of the camera or something?
He's a weirdo. Yeah.
But then now we want him to say something, and he's not at all. I thought Chips Keswick was going. I didn't even know he was still there. And even when I've known he's still been there before, he's never done anything. So it was weird for him to come out with a statement. Let's be honest, he probably didn't write it. It was just his name put to it. I mean, Schwinn will know this better than me, but I know Bloomberg have got on Gazidis' profile, has got him as an AC Milan employee as of September. It's very unusual that Bloomberg are inaccurate, as far as I know. I mean, I assume Schwinn knows more than me about this because I know next to nothing. So I'll pass this one over.
Schwinn?
Very strange. If you had asked me a week ago, I would have said there's probably not a high probability of that happening. But with each passing day, I grow, I don't want to say fearful, but I do fear for the club. Not because Gazidis isn't replaceable, but it's the situation that he's fought over the last decade, and to leave now is a bit perplexing. I mean, I have the statement pulled up here, and it says nothing really. I mean, it says we're aware of the speculation. We know he receives many offers. He has never accepted an offer, and he has never spoken about them publicly. He has always been fully committed and is currently working in Singapore. You know, it doesn't talk about the future at all. It doesn't talk about that, no, it's all false. He will stay. and this is all bullshit. It's a statement for a statement's sake, and it, you know, in corporate speak, if you're not denying something, then you're pretty much accepting it and in a way confirming it. So to me, it's very strange. In a way, it's a shocking indictment for me against the Kroenkes, because Gazidis really was frustrated over the last decade, and he realized he had to outweigh Arsene. Now that he's done that, and in my opinion, he's delivered in terms of the transition really well, I think to leave at this moment, unless we have something planned already, and which we'll find out, of course, in the aftermath of him leaving, I think it's a shocking indictment against the Kroenkes. And, you know, of course, we've seen Usmanov rumors about him selling his stake come up as well. So there has to be some connection there, I imagine. I don't know what, but it cannot be a coincidence. There's nothing known as a coincidence in the corporate world. And I could probably see Son Leahy and Miss Lintat and some of the other, changes that we've made dividing the responsibility. But still, to leave right away after having won this battle that he's fought for 10 years is really, really strange. And in a way, he's leaving, you know, his job incomplete, I feel. You could say that his stock is high right now and he wants to leave on a good note. When his stock is high, he can go earn good money at Milan. Nothing against AC Milan either. They're a solid club with a definitive pedigree. I know, Tez, you wouldn't like to hear that, but, you know, history tells us otherwise. Yeah, and very strange to me.
History. Yeah. Fuck AC Milan.
They're with you, brother, but Gazidis doesn't seem to agree.
Oh, no. Okay, Tony, are you with us, mate?
Yep.
Clay Conservative, or Clay Co-Conservative, says, do you think a 4-2-3-1 is more probability after the success at PSG? I still think Aubameyang should play up top, and Ozil looked very effective at 10. Also, Tezza, how awesome is Brisbane? I have a cousin moving there this fall. Brisbane, yeah, lovely place. Nice little place up there, yeah. Sunny little place. Big place, actually. I presume he's talking about the town, Brisbane, or Brisbane Roar, the football team, I don't know. But, yeah, good place. But I'm already living down a bit further south, mate, in God's country, so. Tony?
We certainly looked better 4-2-3-1 yesterday than we did in whatever formation we was playing before. I think you're always going to have joy if you can let Ozil play as a 10 with a free role to an extent. And I don't know how much of looking better yesterday was down to Aubameyang playing through the middle. It's nothing against Lacazette, but I think we are a much more threatening team with Aubameyang through the middle. So I don't know what it is. For me, I agree with the question. For me, I wouldn't have Lacazette starting. The issue is with that at the moment is if you go 4-2-3-1 without Lacazette, if you want Aubameyang through the middle, then you look at the three behind. Then, okay, you put Ozil at 10, you put Mickey either side, and then what are you looking at? A Welbeck or an Iwobi? And that's really not acceptable for a starting position with Welbeck or Iwobi on the left. So for me, without signings, it's very difficult to play Aubameyang through the middle just because we've got no one to play behind him, and we're sort of spiting ourselves in a sense that we make our team stronger by playing our best striker through the middle, but then we're horrendous behind him. Whereas if you play Lacazette through the middle, it makes us slightly weaker there, but Aubameyang on the left is indefinitely better than Iwobi and Welbeck.
Okay, boys, we'll push through those questions. MAA Gunner, Schwinn, how many points will you be satisfied with after the two games of the season?
I want to say 4, but I'm going to say 6 on this one, just because City and Chelsea don't have all the players they need as of now in their preseason. And, you know, City probably can still give us a fight just because, you know, their system is quite fixed. It's quite robust, and their players can probably slot in right away. Chelsea, on the other hand, have a lot to deal with, a lot to learn. Sarri and Conte play very different brands of football. And from what I saw yesterday when Chelsea played Inter, it seemed like Sarri ball was already taking shape. But, you know, a lot of makeshift players were in there. So when you have some of the other players coming back, I'm not quite sure how it's going to gel. Contrary to all that, our players have been together for a while now. Torreira is coming back later today, I think, and Granit is also going to be returning soon along with Welbeck and Nacho. So I'm not sure how we're going to shape up, but I think this is the right time to play these two teams, even West Ham after that, to, you know, to get us going, gather some momentum. And 6 points, I don't think is too much of a burden, if I'm honest.
Yeah, I'm going for six. How about you, Tony?
Well, the question was satisfied. I'd be satisfied with four. But obviously I want six. I want seven if that's somehow possible.
Christian asked, or Mr. Scantastic, at Mr. Scantastic. I love that handle. Here's one for you. With the preseason giving a lot of fans hope with the talent of, what's his name? Guendouzi. Guendouzi. I'm looking for a double O in there, that's all. Guendouzi. I'm going to go with Guendouzi.
It's Frosty, my friend.
Okay, right. We'll go Guendouzi. How do you think our midfield would set up come opening day of the season, Tony?
Xhaka, Torreira, Ramsey.
Okay, there it is. That was simple. What did you think harder on that?
So I've thought that for weeks. Nothing. I've not seen anything that's changed my mind.
Yeah, okay. Cosman Buta, do you guys know why Nacho isn't with the squad yet? I don't remember him actually playing too much at the World Cup. Schwinn?
He didn't play at all at the World Cup, if memory serves me correctly. I think he might be the only Arsenal player who didn't feature at all. Close to Welbeck, I think, who played just 10 minutes against Belgium, I think, in the group stages. But still, you know, when you're away with the national team, you're still training, you're still going through that same regimen. You enter a game with the mentality that you will have to play at some point. So that just because you don't feature then doesn't mean you're not mentally and physically ready to feature. So any preseason time is more than welcome. And to be fair, considering how Kolasinac has played in the preseason so far, I'd let him rest till the time he wants to, just because I don't want him to come early and damage himself in one way or the other. And then we'll have to rely on Kolasinac throughout, you know, midweek and on the weekend. So if I'm not mistaken, he's scheduled to return next week. Is that right, Tony?
I believe it's – I'm not sure, because I'm not sure if Torreira is coming back a week early or if that's his scheduled time. If it's his scheduled time, then Nacho should be coming back the same day because they went out the same round. But I think Torreira may be coming back a week early. Actually, no, it should be. It should be tomorrow, because otherwise if Nacho's due to come back next week, the teams that got to the finals would have another week, which would mean they wouldn't be back to the opening weekend of the season, which that's is right. too late. So yep, I believe Nacho should be back tomorrow. Everyone apart from Welbeck should be back tomorrow.
Well, what's wrong with Welbeck?
Welbeck will have another week because he went further in the tournament.
Oh, yeah, of course. Fucking England. Right, okay. How could I forget?
Don't. Please don't. But, you know Tony's going to make us remember that again.
But what did Welbeck do? That was what I was thinking. Yeah, Welbeck's coming home. That's the only thing that's coming home. okay, Sarvesh831C. Watching the players play, Tony, what do you think will be our starting lineup for the game against City? Give us your opinion on who should play. Unfortunately, even though I like Xhaka, he doesn't make it in my starting 11 if he is fit and ready. Sorry, Tez. Well, mate, you are a fool. Tony?
Leno, Hector, I'm going to change from last week. Mustafi, Socrates, Nacho, Torreira, Xhaka, Ramsey, Ozil, Aubameyang, Lacazette. That's what I think we'll play. That's not what I would play.
I think the question was, what do you think will be our starting lineup?
No, that's what I think will be the starting lineup.
What would you pick?
I would go. See, the danger is because it's City, he's going to be pragmatic. So I think the back four pretty much picks itself. There's question marks over who partners Socrates. As I said, I would try and get Aubameyang down the middle with Ozil at 10, Mickey one side, and if you're doing that, it has to be Iwobi. And Wenger always liked Iwobi in big games as well because he holds the ball well. If Emery's seen the same thing, it wouldn't massively surprise me if he'd done that.
Okay, who is your two centre backs?
I think he'll go Socrates Mustafi.
Yeah, I agree. Socrates. And left was you went Nacho, didn't you?
Yeah, because he's ran Kolasinac into the ground, which is what he needed to do because he's not fit enough. But he can't have been impressed in what he's seen.
Now, my only thing is, and I know Bellerin's been with us for a long time and whatnot, but would you take the punt on Lichtsteiner in a game against City? No. Okay.
Not only because he would have had one game maximum with the team. Like, you assume if he comes back tomorrow, we've got Chelsea midweek, he's not going to play in that. Then we've got Lazio next weekend. Even if he plays 90 then, it's still a stretch to come in to a completely new team in a new system and start against the best team in the country. And not only the best team in the country, the best winger in the country. Because probably one of the only players City will have that is fresh is Leroy Sané.
Mm. Okay. Schwinn, what about you, mate?
Lots of questions. Second centre back.
I'm thinking me yourself. I'm thinking Mafropanos there too.
Yeah, second centre back, left back, second midfielder, winger. Does he stick with Oba up top? Because after yesterday, he gives you an outlet. And look, PSG weren't competitive, but they still tried to press us. And there were times when we played the ball out superbly, but there were also times when Guendouzi lifted his head and just played one over the top. And with Alba up there, there's a lot you can still do. You know, he's quick on the ball, gets to it, holds it well, and then is quick to turn around and you know, get around the corner of his defender. So that's a big question for me, whether Lacazette retains his position. And I can see us playing three in midfield that day, just to the point that Tony mentioned, just to be a bit more solid. But then who do you take out? Do you play Perez? Do you play Iwobi? Is Welbeck going to be ready? Again, one with powerful running power and, you know, who can be a menace when he doesn't have a ball. So I think it's a bit too early. I mean, we're of course going to do a season preview a day before or 2 days before the City game. And I think I'll have, a bit more clarity by then. But for now, I think the next two games are going to be crucial in determining how Emery thinks. I'm not even sure he knows at the moment, because there's a lot of players coming in. There's a lot of changes he wants to, I'm sure, inflict upon this team. So I think it's just the question's a week or two premature, in my opinion.
I think you got to go with Torreira. He's there. Granit's for me is a starter. Now, I don't know about that other position, because, Ozil, Ramsey, Mkhitaryan, I just... You guys are saying up front, aren't you? You're going three up front, did you?
I can see that, just because it's City.
It's lots of questions. I'll say something when we do our pre-game, because I'm like you, Schwinn. I don't know what he'll go.
Even the goalkeeper, if I'm honest. I mean, I know we've invested a lot of money in Leno, and in all probability, he will be the starting goalkeeper. But first game of the season, if Emery doesn't have his team out there, and even if he doesn't have his brand of football being played, if he wants to be a bit conservative and, you know, wants to get out of there with the morale not damaged of the team, which is a possibility considering we're playing the best team in the league, it's possible we see check-in goal. You know, there's just a lot of factors that have to still fit into the equation.
Okay. COYG chat. Okay. Emery has shown he's happy to play Aubameyang wide to accommodate him and Lacazette in the same team, Tony. So do you think we still sign a winger before the end of the window, or do you believe we have enough options within the squad as we can cope without a new winger?
Do I want us to? Yeah. Do I know if we will? I have no idea. Despite Aubameyang playing there, we still have no one that can play really on the right. I mean, look, Mickey can play wide right, but I wouldn't class him as a winger. So, look, for me, I think it's essential. Whether it will be done or not, I don't know. And I'm probably leaning more towards it won't be done now just because of the time we've had and the time we've got left. But I think it is something that pretty much has to be done.
Okay. Schwinn, Dean Potter says, lots of changes being made at the club on the lighthearted note. Should we change the music we play as the players leave the tunnel and walk out onto the pitch? Something inspiring, a new anthem for a new era. He'd love to hear Queen, We Will Rock You. Schwinn and Tony is both answer.
I'll let Tony take this one.
I think We Will Rock You would be absolutely farcical at a football stadium. And like, just no. But I hate the song, Good Old Arsenal. I literally hate it. Good Old Arsenal, we're proud to say that name. While we sing this song, we'll win the game. I hate singing it in the stands because I feel like we're guaranteed to concede just as we're singing it. But we came out to that against Atletico Madrid, and it worked really well. So I wouldn't mind that being brought back, as much as I feel the song is just jinxing absolutely everything.
I thought he was talking about that song by the one that with the Fat Boy Slim. When's that one played?
No, yeah, so we do.
Yeah, but okay.
For a one-off against Atletico, we came out to good old Arsenal.
Ah, right, okay. Yep, yep. Okay. We Will Rock You, eh? Imagine that. We Will Rock You. Utash, do you think Emery is planning to have the 4 to 5 senior players as captain, Schwinn, with each one of them taking the role, leading, commanding 2 to 3 players on and off the pitch?
That's what you want in a team, that there's people without the armband who can guide and motivate players around them, whether it's the young players or you know, even someone older than them. I think the 4 to 5 player thing that Emery said has been taken a bit too literally. I think it was said out of uncertainty because Emery didn't know his squad well enough, and because he wasn't sure whether we have a captain material player in the starting 11. And I think it's something that people have run with. For me, it's indicative of, as Tony said a couple of weeks ago, that we don't have natural leaders on the pitch. And in a way, I know there's a lot of talk about who's going to be captain, whether Aaron Ramsey should be given the ban, and that's going to incentivize him to stay. But to me, the captain's armband doesn't mean a whole lot anymore. We've spoken about this at length during the season, and I don't really think it's a big talking point, in my opinion. What I would like to see is players like Torreira, Lichtsteiner, some of the newcomers who are characters. We've even seen Petr Cech sort of become a bit more vocal, especially during the penalty shootout against Atletico in Singapore. I want players to be able to just say things despite their position in the squad, and not be afraid of you know, taking on a big personality. That's what I want to see. And the captains aren't mad to me in secondary at this moment.
Okay. Tony Utash also says, looks like the three mids that Emery likes are a DM who can shield, the CBs, etc., Torreira, Elneny, a box-to-box CM who can play long balls, can dribble and distribute the ball, example Ramsey and Guendouzi. Fuck, you've thrown me now, Schwinn. Guendouzi, right, get it. A creative ACM, example Ozil or Mickey. Where do you think, another question, where do you think Granit fits in?
Well, look, I don't think he's going to play three centre mids in that mould. I think that's more of a 4-2-3-1. So including an attacking midfielder in that is kind of not really part of the point. Also, I wouldn't really call Guendouzi a box-to-box or Guendouzi. I'll just say it wrong all season. Fuck it.
How I do.
Yeah, exactly. I would look. He's got more energy than Granite, but I would compare him more to Granite than I would to Ramsey. He hasn't got ahead of the ball, I don't think, at any time during the two friendlies or the three friendlies. And Ramsey's pretty much always ahead of the ball. So I just think that's a weak comparison. And if you're looking at the mould of players, I would put Guendouzi and Xhaka in the same mould, not Guendouzi and Ramsey.
I was going to ask, I haven't seen much of Guendouzi. Is he like a Granit Xhaka player?
Look, he sits behind the ball, tries to break up play. He's got a decent range of passing from what we've seen. A bit more energy, bit quicker across the ground. But look, it's difficult. We've seen about 120 minutes of him, 130 minutes, and in friendlies.
Mm.
So I'm not going to judge him. In the same way, if he'd been bad, I wouldn't say he's this, he's that. It's who knows?
Mm-hmm.
And I can't base on his past time because he played, I think, 12 or 16 games in the second division in France.
Well, I was going to say that as well. Nothing against the kid, but he did come from second division in France. So what made Arsenal see this kid before anybody else?
Scouts.
Mm. Okay. Well, Brennan will start. Sorry. The Prophet Lion, do you think Eddie could give Lacazette a real fight for the strike position, Schwinn?
No, please, let's move on.
Okay, Brads, haven't heard from you for a while, mate. At Original Brads, when in pre-season, is it a good time to judge players? From what I've seen, Socrates hasn't really impressed the defence, still looks shaky. Mickey, Bellerin and Klozinac have also not been good so far. Schwinn?
I think Tony spoke about this a bit, and the key metric is improvement. You know, if Klozinac was terrible, as he was against Atletico, but improved against PSG, that's when you judge them. You don't judge them off a 40-yard strike. You know, you don't judge Emile Smith-Rowe off the finish he had against Atletico, for example. You judge him on the basis of how he was doing the bad things and then he improved them or removed them from his game. So, yes, some players have looked a bit shaky. You know, we spoke about Bellerin. We spoke about Kolasinac. Socrates is one who hasn't impressed. But then again, my expectation from him wasn't sky high anyway. And, yes, you can include Mickey in that list, who was a bit shaky, but at the same time, he wasn't all that bad. So there is time, there is two games to go in the preseason, and there is, you know, some competition that will take place for the position. So I'm happy to give them time for now, but what I'm looking for is constant improvement in decision-making and making things, you know, eradicating things from your play that are susceptible to mistakes.
And Tony Brad's also asked, would you promote Smith Rowe to the first team?
I believe he will be training with the first team squad now. He obviously has done all pre-season. The same way Reece, Eddie and Ainsley trained with the first team squad. Ainsley all of the season, but the other two for most of the season last season. Doesn't mean they're going to get a look in. I mean, Eddie didn't get a Premier League start and he trained with the first team for not the whole season, but I think pretty much Christmas onwards. He was in with the first team. I mean, you got to remember Giroud went and Aubameyang come in, but then Lacazette got injured straight away, so it left Aubameyang really, because Danny was being used wide as the only striker, so they needed to get someone else in. So Eddie was pretty much there from January till the end of the season, but still didn't start again.
Okay. Question for the pod. This came in DM by Matt Lewis. Curious if there's any inside info, just your thoughts on the Serge Gnabry situation from a couple of years ago. Serge Gnabry situation a couple of years ago. I feel like he would be exactly like we need in the squad, and he was here and played well when asked at young age. Sanchez been there have anything to do with Just kind of curious what the hell happened. Thanks, guys. Been listening since the beginning. Thanks, Matt. Thanks for listening, mate. Tony?
It's a strange one because Wenger really liked him, and I think he sent him out to get minutes and to toughen him up a bit. Because as a winger in the Premier League, you've got to accept you're going to get kicked and you're going to get fouled a lot. So he sent him out to West Brom under Pulis, which was a terrible decision in hindsight. But I think he wanted him to get toughened up. But in the end, he just didn't play enough. And then he went back to Germany on loan, and he obviously felt comfortable there. The physicality didn't affect him as much. And Bayern Munich obviously liked what they saw. I know he's obviously gone to Bayern now, but when he actually left us, he was it Hoffenheim he went to, but it was Bayern that signed him. It was just a year agreement that he was always going to go to Bayern. So it was kind of taken out of Arsenal's hands in a sense. I think the move to West Brom killed any chance he had of being a Premier League player or a player for Arsenal in the Premier League. But the reasons behind it were probably right in that he did need to toughen up. But he just didn't get the minutes, and I think he became disillusioned with British football, as a lot of players have done under Tony Pulis. Tony Pulis, I'm not really criticising him, but he's one of these, he's a bit like Marmite, you either love him or hate him. And if you do hate him, or if you fall out with him as a player, you're just wasting your time, you're never going to get that back. And I think Gnabry firmly fell into that camp.
Okay. Boys, we've talked a fair bit about, you know, ins and outs and players and things, ins. I just wanted to touch quickly on some more outs. And everybody, thank you for your questions as well, and keep them coming every podcast that we do, throw it up there. But Tony, you know, Chambers, he's looking at, I heard his name in that whole segment then, so... Is he one to hang around for a bit longer or go out on loan, you think?
Well, look, it's difficult. We didn't mention Holding at all. We only bring Mavropanos up as a passing comment. I just think we didn't really go over it. But look, if we don't bring anyone in, none of them will go out. If we do, one of them will. I don't think it'll be Mavropanos. It'll be one of the other two. Look, it's interesting because Holding's the only one that's played in every game. At centre back. So Chambers has played as a centre back a bit yesterday. On Friday, he played in a back three, Thursday, against Borehamwood. He played in centre mid. Holding played centre back, and Mavropanos didn't play yesterday. So Holding's the only one of them three that's played in centre back in every game. We do need some outs. I don't think there'll be anyone English just because it doesn't make sense in terms of the homegrown. Because where you could have people like Reece, Eddie and Ainsley in your squad for free and not counting as part of your 25, we're only on 7 of 8. We need 8 homegrown players, and we've got 7 who are of age, and it would be silly just if we get rid of them. It means there's 2 wasted spaces in our squad where you'd have to name Reece or Eddie or Ainsley or Emil when you don't have to. So I can't see anyone English going. Any senior English player going.
Okay. Joel Campbell, he's still floating around?
Yeah, he's off.
He's heading off, you reckon? On loan or sold?
I think he's only got a year, so there's no interest in Arsenal to loan him except to get him off the wage bill. But if no one makes a bid of actual money for him, then they'll just loan him to get him off the wage bill, and then he'll no longer be an Arsenal player.
Okay, a Spooner, he'll probably head off shortly.
Yeah, I expect him to go this week. He should be back this week. Actually, he should have been back last week. But obviously, while we was away, it's a bit of a messy one because he went out in a stage where... he went out the same stage as Xhaka, yeah. So he should be back tomorrow, but I think he'll be gone this week.
Okay. Anything else on outs that you can think of off the top of your head? Lucas Perez, he's going to be up in the air whether he stays or goes, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, again, the cash value is going to come into it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, boys. Now, Schwinn, I wanted to go to you, mate, because our friends...
Just before we do this, who won the shirt?
Oh, yeah, go on. Who won the shirt?
I don't know.
I forgot. okay, so we give away a shirt that was kindly donated by @ArsenalUrban. and you can find him at urbanfshop.com. And this week, all you had to do was be part of our live callers. So we will be giving some of these shirts away throughout the season, courtesy of at Arsenal Urban. Give him a follow as well, and if you're looking to buy some shirts, head that way. London-based, I believe, Tony, as well. Or over your way somewhere. I don't know whether it's London or England, over that way somewhere. So anyway, today's winner will go to MAA Gunner. So congratulations, MAA Gunner. And thank you for your call, mate. And you've been a really good supporter of the podcast for a lot of years, the last season, I suppose. Okay, also, Schwinn, we have a community announcement to make from our friends at Gooners in the USA, mate.
That is correct. Our friends Mike and Andy have started this venture that they're undertaking for the next month or so, which is called Gooners versus Cancer. You can find them at goonersversuscancer.com. And of course, you can interact with Mike at Gooners in USA on Twitter to learn more about this. In a nutshell, this is they're raising funds to fight leukemia and other sorts of blood cancer globally. And the target for them is $2,500, and they've just started that. So we're just $50 into the fundraising campaign. But we all know cancer is one of the most invasive diseases out there. People in my family have suffered from it, and I know firsthand that Mike has also endured some of this in his family. So, I'm sure people know someone who has been inflicted by this or affected by this in one way or the other. So we'd love for you guys, for our listeners, to show some support to Mike and Andy. Go chat with them, learn more about what they're trying to do, what the main aim of raising this money is. And you can also visit the website, which is goonersversuscancer.com, and learn more about what they're trying to do. So go give them a follow, go give them a shout, and join with them in this really good venture that they're trying to do over there.
And you can follow them on Twitter at Gooners in USA. Is that correct?
That's correct. And you can find Andy at Gooner in Denver. Once again, the website is goonersversuscancer.com.
Okay. All right, boys, anything else that we didn't cover?
No.
I hope not.
No. Okay. We'll just take a bit of minute, Tony, to talk about Shaqiri and Shaka, mate. What would you... That'd be amazing, wouldn't it?
Didn't you have enough of it during the summer, Tess?
Did you see the goal, though, boys? Did you honestly see that goal? Oh,
overrated.
That is... I'm already pinning that as a goal. Spione's a Liverpool player. Goal of the season, I'm already pinning that. But
You should go bet all your money on that.
Granted, will come up with one better, guarantee it. Okay. Let's go. Thanks for listening. Thank you for downloading. You can follow us at clockend_talk. And my name's Tez. You've been listening to Tony and Schwinn ramble on. And thank you again, and speak to you all next week. See ya. Thank you.